He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.
And I will start off by saying I read something on the news this morning that here we go again about small cars coming out to replace former small cars that grew big. And now one of the small cars that just came out is being enlarged already, and that's the Audi Q3 SUV. And this, I don't know why they can't fixate on the size for these models and leave them there, because they try to keep, I know why they do it, because the competition comes out with 1 inch more leg room and 1 inch more hip room and all that, and they're equivalent to the Q3, and the Q3's got to catch up because they're afraid they're going to lose two sales to the other guys.
The other thing, and I have to say that for the last, Carvana is now, while it's a fixation, it's also been advertising pretty heavily.
Carvana?
Yeah, but the whole thing about it is you can just buy a car, you can buy everything else online to buy a car, and you can do it while binge-watching your favorite show, and blah.
So in your opinion, Carvana is really not an alternative way to look at buying a car? Is that what you're saying to us?
In my opinion, if you're actually talking about cars and whether it's an inch more or an inch less, there's a whole marketing thing that's going on that's removing people from that.
What channel are you seeing the Carvana ads on? Because I haven't seen one at all.
Really?
Not in the last month, I can recall.
Okay. I am seeing them during news shows. I am seeing lots of sports.
I don't look at a lot of stuff.
And yesterday I was surprised, again, to find it. But the point is, if you are changing or attempting to change the brain of the average car buyer so that it's just all the same and it doesn't matter, you just press a button and a car comes to your house, then
Q3. Like a Pez dispenser.
Anyways, you should see the car vending machine that they have in the ads.
Well, Jay wants to get in on this, so let's let him go.
Well, I'll let the rant go for a little bit between the two of you. You're doing just fine this morning. I think it's.
But what I'm trying to figure out is if you're going to actually if you're going to try and train a generation to care about something.
Somebody decided they wanted to try a new way of a car selling, and this was what they came up with. Yep. And they thought maybe it'd be cute, it'd be interesting for the car public, and we'd want to go get our car dispensed out of a rotating garage and go and take delivery in Ohio or wherever the Carvanas are, because they're certainly not around
here.
They'll
bring it
to you
anywhere.
Of.
Okay, if I can barge in. Yes. For one thing, we buy everything else like that. People ever heard of Amazon?
I mean, absolutely.
That's exactly what we do. We buy things in a box and they're shipped to us.
It started with the Spiegel catalog in Chicago, 60611 Chicago, Illinois. But the point is that then what happens is if you just buy stuff online, that's one thing. If you do your entire life online, then you have no sense of texture different, because you're just looking at a picture, and that is all I am talking about. But you're looking at a picture and you're pressing the button.
Well, the question is how many people go out to a car lot near you and look at these things and then go try to see if they can find a car they thought they found on a car lot, and Carvana is the way they want to do it.
Go on. If I may, I think it's a tool and it's a sales channel. It doesn't mean we cannot go touch and feel and test and drive and gather information elsewhere. Speaking of what's it called now?
Carvana.
Carvana, thank you. I'm surprised at how few vehicles they actually have. I mean, we're talking a few thousand or 10,000 vehicles. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not all that much relative to the amount of advertising they're doing.
Where are the vehicles coming from?
They're probably coming from all over. They're bought at auctions everywhere. Yeah. But they are central. I forget where their central vending machine is.
I said Ohio, but I don't know where that's in.
Okay.
But somewhere there, out there, not near here.
I forget. Or you can have it delivered. I have seen a Carvana truck around New York City, so they deliver the car.
Yeah.
So you can buy it online. And
then I think you have a 30-day guarantee or test drive, too.
You do.
You have something like that.
But again,
miles.
Having known people who have purchased clothes or something online, I know people who are just
some people will do it to try something new.
And some people will just buy things and then send them back the next day. My question, though, is with that sort of sales, do they have to hold that inventory, or are they is it like?
We don't know.
I honestly don't know. I think they own a lot of inventory, and a lot of it is centralized wherever that vending machine is, and I say that quote unquote.
Yeah.
But I'm sure. I don't know if they have cars that are sitting on lots, on other people's lots. I don't know who's financing them. It would be interesting to find out.
It'd be very interesting because there's a real
research artist in this group, this trio, which is Jay DeMarkin, will find out more about it and provide us with more information in a show, and we will move on.
But before we do that, I want to find out if it's also owned by – I would not be – just as PayPal, et cetera, is actually owned or managed by banks. Ooh.
Okay.
I would be interested to see if Carvana is actually an outlet from...
Probably not a manufacturer, but maybe of another group. But, you know.
That's all.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Let's go to improving appeal on two different fronts. I've got this automotive news issue here, and the front page says, mid-engine vet aims to halt skidding sales. Well, the mid-engine Corvette, we haven't talked a lot about in the show. I have yet to see it on live. There's a picture here, spy picture with a cover on it. Jay and I have had some discussion about whether or not real Corvette people are going to embrace the mid-engine version of a Corvette, or whether they think it's going to be, and I sort of think it's going to be, not a flop, but I can't imagine that the real true Corvette enthusiasts of the past and those who own the current models really want to go to a mid-engine just because it's there. Jay may disagree. We'll wait for him in a minute. The other thing that's trying to increase appeal is an auto show. The Detroit Auto Show's appeal has skidded. Several manufacturers are not going to appear next year, and now they've moved it to June to try to boost appeal and maybe get the charisma back. I don't know why. There's a whole number of reasons. But the auto show, Jay may like to have a say about that too. Is the auto show an endangered show, do you think, Jay?
Or Detroit not? Could be or not. They're trying to turn it into some kind of carnival, and I say that again that lightly. What they've realized about the Detroit Auto Show is that in the middle of winter, Detroit in the middle of winter is not a destination.
And when you could go to,
trade shows, conventions, the cities that are popular are cities like Orlando, destinations, resorts. Detroit doesn't come to mind. So I think there's the idea is to turn Detroit into or portray Detroit and present Detroit as a new revitalized city. Right. And summertime is certainly a better time to do that than in the middle of winter. And I think it's that simple.
When is, there's a calendar.
LA starts things out, I believe, in the fall.
All right. So
and then it moves eastward from there.
But let's face it. I mean, auto shows, the whole point of auto shows has changed.
It's an entertainment center.
It was a presentation of product to the public. We all know that in the world that we live in, we get bombarded with new product on a daily basis, on an hourly basis.
Yeah, it's a completely different.
It's a completely different.
There's no.
Just like real estate.
Yes.
It's just like real estate.
But the anticipation, the whole looking forward to, I don't know, you are both old enough to have waited for the mail to come 4 to 6 weeks for your Dick Tracy decoder ring or something.
Well,
no,
we used to wait for our car magazines, but by the time they get
they're
to our
completely out of date, and that is another mind meld.
Well, that's why you have weekly periodicals such as Auto Week, and because that does accelerate the knowledge base a little bit ahead of the monthly car mags.
Although you
look at the date on the car mag that comes in June, and it's all August. And then the July one is September.
But the point is, they started
production of them in May.
Yes, of course. But if you look, let's just say that a car interests you and you happen to be in your office and you go online. The next thing you know, all of the advertising on all the sites that you go to is going to be of that car that you went to look at. So if there's anything that you... any news or anything about it, you're going to have it long before the magazine.
Well, that's right, but that's
when
fine.
I read the New York Times online, I see ads for shoes all the time if I just happen to have been looking for shoes.
Right. The point is that...
Anyway,
Anyway, let's move.
Let's move about back to cars about the mid-engine Corvette. I think I'm a lot more positive about the mid-engine Corvette than you are. Yes, I've read as late as this morning the feedback from readers in this particular car magazine, Car and Driver, who have
backfires
have given their opinion on the mid-engine Corvette, and there is a lot of
backlash.
But this is the way you have to look at it. I think Chevy, GM, is going to add the mid-engine Corvette, and not in any way, they're not considering halting the production of a front-engine Corvette. And I think you're going to see two-model Corvette product line. And quite frankly, and I've said this for quite a few years now, I think Corvette should become the sports car brand of General Motors. I mean, there's no reason a Corvette should be a Chevy.
Well, it sort of is, but do they need two? Do they need a mid-engine and a front-engine? Why?
Because it's fun.
It's a sports car brand. There are more than one Porsche. There are more than one Lamborghini. There's more than one Ferrari. Not everybody has to have the same Porsche. Not everybody has to have the same Corvette. And there are people who are going to keep wanting to buy front-engine Corvettes, and there are people who are going to want more efficient supercars, like a mid-engine supercar. And
well, we're not going to be the ones to decide that. The public will, something to watch in the coming year when the actual mid-engine Corvette is available for purchase.
All right, so ignorance alert. Is the Chevy Camaro fit in there?
Yes, it's a sports car.
Because you could do Chevy Camaro, GM.
Cadillac had a version too.
The muscle cars like the Ford Mustangs, the Chevy Camaros, the Dodge Challengers are a whole different breed altogether. Honestly, I don't know if you have to be the marketing guru at these companies, I don't know where you place them in the product.
Okay, well then never mind.
And the thing about the Camaro is that it's been moving closer and closer to the performance characteristic to the Corvette. So the mid-engine Corvette, to Jay's credit, would differentiate the Corvette brand further away from the Camaro, because you probably aren't going to see a mid-engine Camaro in the lineup either.
But this is the problem that GM has been having with brands
forever.
Some brands, that's Ford, but the Mercury Sable is the thing at Ford. But if you look in the GM portfolio of product, we've talked about this before. The Buick brand is kind of floating away at sea, and nobody really knows how to position it. They've tried to turn Cadillac into a sports
luxury sports brand,
and that's not really working for them. They have a Cadillac racing team. It really doesn't do much for Cadillac sales. And the idea is, one idea is to focus the sports product into the Chevy Corvette brand under that umbrella.
Did somebody say during the show that lots of Buicks are being sold in China?
And Buick is importing a Chinese brand of Buick into the U.S., which is more meant to be sort of like a wagon, and got a mixed review in one report I read. Jay looked at it, I believe, and told me I should be purchasing one when he was down looking at the Bolt in Tarrington a couple of months back.
That one is not made in China, by the way. But
that one was not, or was?
No, the Tour X is not made in China.
To try to talk me into buying a Buick was, I don't know where he was coming from, but we'll leave it at that. And he thought I would like the Buick vehicle because he thought it looked pretty good.
It looks awesome.
They are getting better. I will grant you, they are getting much better. They stay for about several years now, up until maybe this year and maybe late last year. Their grills were still attracting a set of buyers that, shall I say, would not make the numbers of sales of Buick go off the charts.
Robin, this was not about Buick. This was about a particular wagon. Wow. And some of us here are really understand wagons and appreciate wagons, and I think Jill does too, and I think that in that respect the Buick Touareg is a great new wagon, just like the Volvo V90 and the up to come
fabulous
V60.
Jay,
Is it okay. square? Or is it lozenge?
Buicks
used to
be D, all of the above.
Buicks, okay, above. Because Buicks used to be wonderful for if you had a big painting.
Well, the great Roadmasters yes. of yesteryear
exactly.
and the Chevrolet so often versions you'll see, and the Caprice wagons and all that. Yes, they were giant behemoths and they cavernous and they could hold caskets.
Yeah, well, it used to be that every so often I just saw a Buick, one of those old, what was it, a Roadmaster?
Oh, there's somebody around here who's got four of them.
Yes, that's right, he does. And we know who he is. He lives in Lakeville.
Mm-hmm.
There was something else I was sifting through here that I wanted to bring up, and now I've lost it. So, Jay, do you have anything to go into about your research on cars in the last week?
I guess I can have my shot at rants as well. With the weather we've had until yesterday, we've had a lot of bad weather, and I've been driving a lot. And last week, for instance, I went down to New York and back, and I saw, I think, three crashes. And I'm sure none of them needed really to happen. I think people just don't know how to drive in the rain. People forget that our infrastructure is in terrible condition and roads are really bad and puddles accumulate. And if you go down the hutch or the sawmill, you have to be very, very careful when it's raining or raining hard because you will see ponds and rivers.
Pavement depression is at an epidemic level in these roads that are not being maintained appropriately and resurfaced as needed. But even some of the resurfacing is coming up short, in my opinion, with the engineering of the slope and the stability of the pavement. But Jay's absolutely right. And a lot of people don't know the condition of their tires either. And that's
back
a very
tires.
Important aspect of driving in rain, because if you have no tread to help disperse the water, because your tread wear is down to its wear indicators or almost bald state, you're going to aquaplane with almost no problem at all if you hit the brakes, because there's no place for the water to go but to push the tires up off the pavement, and then you go into a straight-ahead slide even if you've got your wheels turned.
So here's the trick. It's a little like skiing on ice. If you do aquaplane and if you have space, space is key, but if you aquaplane, keep that steering wheel straight and stay off the brakes and ride that wave.
Ride it out.
Because eventually you'll get out of it.
Correct.
And
all you have to hope is
a little
that somebody in
trick.
Front of you hasn't braked more forcibly and creating a lack of space to be able to ride that aquaplaning situation.
Which
out.
I think is a timely reminder in general. I'm always staggered. I remember having to learn the thing about one car length, two car lengths. When I am driving back and forth or even riding back and forth to the city, I am staggered at the zigging and zagging. That's just combination irresponsible and shows no particular regard for the fact that something could, you know, somebody might
need Jay had that happen to him, I think, recently.
It happened to me on that particular drive back from New York just this past week on the sawmill. And
it's just asinine.
It's asinine. People just have no clue
where the next vehicle is.
Where the next vehicle is and the amount of the extra distance you need when road conditions are poor. And let's face it, you know the physics are just such that you have a lot less traction in the rain, and you also have no visibility.
Another category of vehicle you need to watch out for in this kind of errant driving habit is motorcycles, and they are known, especially in heavy traffic situations. Some of them are known to weave down between two lanes of traffic and in and out. Like a slalom skier does gates.
Let me just say one thing about that, though. What they call lane splitting, when motorcycles run down between two lanes between cars, is something that is becoming legal in a number of states. And I don't know whether New York, Mass, or Connecticut, you know, our tri-state area, I don't know what the laws are. I forget. I think lane splitting was becoming legal in New York. Now, it doesn't mean that a motorcycle can weave through traffic at 100 miles an hour.
Some
but it does
try.
Mean that we know some of them try. But if you are crawling at 5 miles an hour in traffic, a certain number of states do allow motorcycles to go between the lanes. And we should not try to turn the wheel and keep them from going by.
Well, to that point, this means that we even have to be more aware of how we drive cars.
Absolutely.
And stay stably going straight in within our lane. And, of course, some of the technology in the new cars have got lane-keeping technology in there so that if the car is drifting because the driver is drifting, as I said on an earlier show, I test drove a new Cherokee that had it in it, and I thought the steering was loose. And I was steering the car, but I was weaving to the left, and the car was going back to the right. And I said, oh, the steering's terrible in this car. And the salesperson next to me said, oh, it's got the lane-keeping technology. So you've got that issue. You've got technology fighting the possibility of motorcycles lane-splitting and the drivers who don't go straight anyways. They are always going back and forth between lanes for whatever reason. So you cannot be too focused on driving at any point when you're driving. Would you agree, Mr. DeMarkin?
Yes.
Okay, great. SUVs versus sedans. We have talked about the fact that some of the domestic manufacturers are letting go of their sedan lines. Conversely, Toyota, Nissan, and Subaru are going to re-emphasize and redesign their sedan lines and keep sedans in the picture. The question will be, will the U.S. manufacturers allow that to happen and lose that complete market, or will they try to come back like Ford's doing with their mid-size Ranger truck after giving up on it? And watching GM come back with a mid-sized truck and sell a lot of them, and now Ford's coming back into the picture 4 years later. So will this happen in the sedan situation? Or we have is this SUV a cycle that will be temporary at some point, or is it going to be the way of life forward? Jay, do you have a comment?
Yeah, it's the way of life forward because SUVs just have more room.
SUVs more room or better road height or seating height that they could put into sedans?
Overall comfort, and I'll define comfort. Okay. Space is always comfort. If you can bring your things and put people and not have cramped legs in the back seat, and six-footers can actually not have their head against the ceiling, I think that's a form of comfort. And, yes, you find it in SUVs. Now, SUVs handled better than they did 15 or 20 years ago.
Yep.
And that was the big debate between cars and SUVs. I think the line is being blurred. Likewise, buying an SUV now because they like to be look over other people is a moot point because everybody's driving an SUV.
So
what do you do?
Drive
a school bus now, and then what?
That's what brought the Hummer out.
I think we need a hydraulic seat going up through the roof so you can be above the traffic with your eyes.
Remember the Hummer? No, seriously,
Hummer,
people were moving. You wanted a bigger.
But that's become a moot point.
Yep. But they've got to be careful about Jay's talk about interior room. You have more room feeling in an SUV is absolutely true. But I just saw an episode of Motor Week yesterday, and they tested four giant SUVs, and they complained about one because they said the console between the seats was so wide it made it feel tight in the front. And this is the largest size SUV group of vehicles you can buy. It wasn't a Taurus level or a Cherokee level that. So the manufacturers, if they want to keep more space in the SUVs, they've got to stop enlarging some of the stuff that sits between the seats so that they don't have to make the seats smaller or whatever.
Well, you know, let's look at the bright side. If you don't like the person sitting next to you, having a lot of space between you and them is a great thing. It's a form of luxury, too.
All right, Jay. With that, we may be about to end.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Yes, I'm going.